This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Matt and Brett here today. Guest free. That's right. No one wanted to come play. Actually, no, I've got some stuff I'm lining up for tomorrow. Looks like it's going to have some good stuff there. But I've got tons to talk about today. Brett, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great after seeing the Supreme Court restore some sanity. Little bit.
Well, they just
a little bit.
I'll get to that story a little bit later on. It's like they said. It's like if you're just established, if this Supreme Court is so far to the right, when it's considered a victory when they just basically reinforced established rulings, which is what they did. They reinforced established rulings barely in is it Alabama?
Yeah, it was Alabama. Yeah. I was just, our expectations are so low, but at least a little smile on my face to see that today.
They stayed with precedent, although Clarence Thomas. All right, I want to be careful here because I understand I am a white guy, but is Clarence Thomas just kind of a quieter version of Kanye West? I mean, is that, I guess, I don't quite know what's going on there, but I have never seen a guy. It's like when I see the women out there arguing, like, I shouldn't be paid the same amount as men. You're like, really? It's like, really? You're not on board with that? Because it would seem to me that you'd want to be on board with something like that. I don't, we'll get to that. Needless to say, there is some sanity that has been put forward out there. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'm going to have to skedaddle. The show's going to get posted late tonight, and here's the reason why. My oldest daughter, my second child, graduates today, and I gotta as soon as I'm done here, I gotta get to a graduation ceremony, so I gotta fly. So, but pretty excited about this. It's one of those where if you have a kid, you just say to yourself, get to the graduation, just get to the graduation, just get to the graduation. At that point, I can kick you out of the house. At that point, I can kick you out, and you're on your own. You're 18. You're an adult. Go, bye. Off you go. And mission accomplished. Only got one more left after this.
Yeah, you're almost an empty nester in a few years.
I got to tell you, about a few hours ago, my daughter is in her graduation outfit. And she looks at me and she says, Dad, is it right if I wear your dog tags? I'm sorry, man. I was a puddle on the ground. Oh, God. I have a feeling this is the beginning of Matt's emotional stage in life because I've got this daughter and another daughter. And there are these things that they kind of, these kind of stereotypical things they say. Like when my son graduated, my wife was beside herself. She was like, there goes my boy. And you have this kind of that thing. That they have there. And then, of course, the dads, and you have your daughters, and you're like, you know, whether it's graduation, graduating college, getting married, I'm just going to be an emotional puddle. I can already say, she wore my dog tags. No one's proud of my military service. I should say this. I've had a lot of people actually say, this is me. That's more of a shot at myself. A lot of people have been very gracious and very nice, and they've said thank you very much for your military service. But it's kind of one of those things where I'm kind of beside myself on that one.
Got the tissues ready?
Oh God, I'm gonna. Well, I'm,
like,
okay, so
pocketfuls of them.
Okay, my wife is the opposite of me. She's already like, I'm bringing like three cowbells. Three? I mean, how are you gonna do this? You know. She's going to be that parent screaming at the top of her lungs when their daughter goes across the thing, and kind of more of a hooah, hooah, hooah. And I'll be over there. I'm going to guarantee you I'm not going to be the only one. I'll guarantee you I'm not going to be the only one. Dad that's over there going to doing that. But yep, got this one. And then two more years, two more sweet years. And then dogs. That's what it's going to be. Kids are gone. I'm going to have, for some reason, I'm going to get more dogs. I'm not sure. Yeah.
You're going to like remodel the rooms immediately too and like make an exercise room and just change everything in a couple of years when you can?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to do that per se. What I will say is we're actually starting to kind of think about that a little bit. What we want to do in regards to in regards to that, what we want to do there. So I'm not quite sure what we're going to do in our post retirement mode, but before we retire, it's going to be, 5-6 years, we'll do some traveling and stuff like that, but it's, I'm not quite sure what we're going to do.
Well, you still have a few years anyways. You still got a young one that's still in school.
Yeah. It is what it is. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I want to start off today. I actually finally finished this. Brett, I finally finished the list of accomplishments that the DFL desk got done in this last legislative session. It took me, because like I said, there are so many little things that happened here. I have posted this list because I said that it would be important for the DFL to push a list out and not just put out this, we passed Senate file 424, which basically took care of the tax code. Said, okay, that's great and all, but you need to go on out there and hammer away the bullet points. You have to go on out there and tell people what exactly you did. You got to go do that. So I have posted this, and it's just a modest summary I call Minnesota F Yeah, the stunning success of the DFL miracle. That's what I've called it there. I hope you got popcorn, and you might have to call a babysitter for the kids, because if you're going to listen to this list is going to take me a while to get through. But this is, once again, why can you feel so proud? Why? You have to go on out there, and especially with friends you have and family that lives in these Republican states, and throw this back at them. And by the way, when they sit there and say, well, we're not going to have to pay for that, it's like, yeah, you do. You just have to pay for a private contractor to do it. It's going to cost you extra money. So God bless Minnesota. That's all I got to say there. So here you go. It is a pretty good list. I will start it here, and I will just... Hopefully I'm done by the next break. Minnesotans can make autonomous decisions about their reproductive health concerning contraception, abortion, and pregnancy. Minnesota is a sanctuary state for women seeking abortions. Subpoenas and extraditions in regards to abortion will not be enforced in Minnesota. Other abortion restrictions, 24-hour waiting period, hospital mandates, women's information gathering, informed consent rule, those were also ended. Minnesota is a sanctuary state for transgender individuals seeking gender-affirming care. Minnesota will not help enforce any out-of-state prosecutions. The practice of conversion therapy for children and vulnerable adults is now forbidden in Minnesota. Paid family and medical leave is now the law in Minnesota. The DFL delivered the largest tax cut in Minnesota history in this session. A major expansion of the high-speed broadband across the state brings us closer to border coverage. All electricity in Minnesota must be carbon-free by 2040. How about that one? Wow. Rebate checks for Minnesotans making $78,000 or less a year and married couples making $150,000 or less. Rebates up to 3 kids per household as well. A child tax credit focused on lower-income workers up to $1,750 per child under 18. Once again, specifically geared towards low-income workers. A massive expansion of Social Security tax exemption geared towards couples making less than $100,000 a year and individuals making less than $78,000 a year. Over 75% of Minnesota seniors no longer have to pay the Social Security tax. Universal free school breakfast and lunch to all kids. $7.8 billion for funding roads, transit, and airports over the next 2 years. Minnesota has become a red flag law, has now a red flag law, which means authorities can seize firearms for someone deemed to be a high risk at injuring themselves or others. Private party transfer of certain firearms now require universal background checks. Free tuition for state universities, public colleges, and tribal colleges for families making $80,000 or less a year. How about that one? How about that little nugget? That would be the banner accomplishment in many states in any given legislative cycle. That's just one of the list here. I'll keep going. Every school district in the state got a massive increase, especially in essential, massive increase in funding, especially in essential services. Rental assistance was expanded for 5,000 more low-income households, with about a third guaranteed to go to outstate communities. New paths for struggling farmers to get their product through hunger relief organizations across the state. Undocumented workers can now get a driver's license. $300 million to low-income families to get access to early childhood education. More mental health resources for every level of education in Minnesota. Major investments into the state college. It's now illegal in Minnesota for people to be knowingly spread false information with the intention of stopping someone from voting. Money to address food insecurity on college campuses. $300 million in new funding for helping public safety officials treat mental health calls. PFASs, the forever chemicals, will be banned in Minnesota starting in 2025. Marijuana will be legal in Minnesota starting on August 1st. Prepare your lighters. Minnesota will expand MinnesotaCare, the state's medical care program, to more people with the goal of offering it to all Minnesotans within a few years. Some marijuana convictions in Minnesota will be expunged when legal marijuana becomes law. A massive investment in green energy, primarily solar panels. Rebates for buying an electric car. Schools will now offer free menstrual products for students, and schools will have the opiate treatment naloxone available as well. $80 million per year for local government and county aid. $326 million for local roads and bridge repair. The gas tax is now tied to inflation, preventing further budget shortfalls. With that, home weatherization and funding for low-income individuals. Voting rights restored to 55,000 Minnesotans with felony convictions, with new rules to reinstate those rights for all felons upon the release from incarceration. Incarceration. There it is. Let me say that right. Far more restrictions on police serving no-knock warrants, harsher penalties for carjackers, a massive increase in spending to upgrade the facilities at the state parks in Minnesota, benefiting every part of the state. That is a jobs bill that's going to go. Think about where these state parks are. It is going to reach every corner of the state. Massive jobs bill and an infusion of cash. How about that? Major investment in expanding mental health services for farmers. 16-year-olds will be automatically registered to vote when they turn 18 in Minnesota. $43 million to help battle violent crime in Minnesota. More authority to the AG to scrutinize medical mergers in this state to make sure the mergers benefit Minnesota. Removal of bizarre rule that prohibited the studying of expansion of mass transit in the South Twin Cities metro area. That was weird. Funding for get commuter rail from the Twin Cities to Duluth. Increased funding for the Attorney General's office to allow him to help more counties in prosecutorial duties. $5 million in renovations to the Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center. $200 million in down payment assistance for low and moderate income Minnesotans to buy homes. $233 million to help address the food mitigation in the state. Money to replace lead pipe water lines across the state. Protections for farmers when grain buyers become financially insolvent. Crackdown on price gouging during emergencies. Helping with emergency funding for food shelves in the state. Cracking down on catalytic converter thefts in Minnesota. Money to encourage the growth of new farmers in Minnesota, especially immigrant and BIPOC farmers. $300 million for the state nursing homes to help address the shortages within that industry. The state will aggressively combat the deer disease, chronic wasting disease, in an effort to limit the impact and consequences. New money for management of our natural lands. $25 million for the snowmobile and ATV trails. Money to deal with crime and drug issues in the metro transit lines. Full-time workers can now accrue paid sick and safe leave time. Money set aside to study the long-term effects of COVID. It's now illegal to discriminate against a person due to their hair. Replenished the AG emergency account. State fish hatcheries will be rebuilt and or improved. Improvements slated for from shore fishing facilities statewide. They expanded dental benefits for the needy. The governor's commission appointments can no longer be held hostage as a long-term negotiating tool. Money to help homeless people pursue employment and educational opportunities. New police stations, fire departments, and public safety centers across the state. Student loan forgiveness for hospital nurses. Employment protections for meatpacking workers. $35 million to improve boat ramps and facilities at lakes statewide. Tax credits for electric bikes. Civics and personal finance classes will be required to graduate high school. expansion of the bike trails across the state, new rules regulating pesticides to stop the devastation of the pollinator species, money to improve Spirit Mountain Ski Area, the end of non-compete agreements in Minnesota, rental assistance for people struggling with mental illness, and Minnesota schools must teach about the Holocaust and genocide, $90 million for Minnesota veteran care. Employers can no longer force employees to attend an anti-union captive audience meeting, increase local cybersecurity grants for local communities, a new public health facility in Bloomington. Teacher unions can now bargain over educator-to-student ratios in classrooms. More school resources for Native American students. Worker protections for Amazon warehouse employees. $350 million for new affordable housing statewide. $120 million to subsidize preservation of the existing affordable housing. In Minnesota, a contractor entering into a construction contract assumes liability for any unpaid wages. $40 million increase to Head Start. All schools in Minnesota will have expanded ethnic studies by 2028. $65 million for 2 years to try to limit family homelessness. $380 million for 47 wastewater projects across the state of Minnesota. Cash money for various projects, including the rebuilding of U.S. Highway 8. Stopped religious colleges from requiring public high school students taking classes at their facilities at PSEO from requiring the students to sign a faith statement. $5.5 million to deal with youth homelessness. Active shooter drills are now banned in Minnesota schools, replaced with violence prevention training once a year. They revived the historic building tax credit, which gives money to people to fix up older buildings, adopted a new education reading curriculum based on phonics. People on bicycles can now have rolling stops at interchanges as long as they safely yield. They increased the film production tax credit to encourage more TV and movie productions to film in Minnesota. We've addressed the potential minnow shortage crisis. Huzzah! I didn't realize there was a crisis on minnows, but apparently there was, and we have dealt with it. Juneteenth is now officially a holiday in Minnesota. A committee to explore the possibility to expand North Star Line all the way to St. Cloud will be formed. A new sheet of ice at the indoor facility in Hermantown, and we renamed a highway after Prince, but in my opinion, we probably should give him at least one county as well. There you go. 9 minutes.
Don't forget a few Republicans voted against the Prince bill, too, oh, which yeah, is still great. We don't want Prince to be the highway name.
Yeah. You can hear him scream louder. Just scream louder, you delicious little buttercups. 9 minutes. 9 minutes of me just reading of this is the accomplishments. How many times in this state, across the country, would five or six of these things be considered a successful legislative session? Gutted down to the basics because some Republicans demanded something. I think the most important thing we learned this last legislative session is that the Democrats, when they went and were insanely overtly cautious because we don't want to make the Republicans mad the last time, and they left a lot of things on the table, they said, the heck with that, they're taking care of business. And they did. And I want to come back. When I come on back, I want to make up another point here, which will infuriate the Republicans. But there is something that's undeniable about all the stuff I just read that needs to be hammered home, at least out in Republican districts. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. So, and by the way, if you do want that complete list, it's up on Progressive Citizen X, the blog. I've got it posted to all the social media sites, the Twitter feed, the Facebook feed at Matt McNeil Show, Progressive Citizen X, and on Mastodon, you can find me over there as well. You can go and click on that, share it, because that list is insane. And Brett, have you ever seen anything like this? I've never seen anything like this.
One session. It's impressive.
It reminds me, we got to put it in perspective. It reminds me of when FDR was doing like the New Deal and just was almost every day was coming out with a brand new idea. Now that was on a federal level and it was much more grandiose and it was a much more serious problem. But in my lifetime, I have never seen a legislative session deliver so many things that are going to help Minnesotans, which brings me to the point, which is going to just really upset the Republicans. Now, religious disclaimer, you do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do. I'm Christian. Was Catholic for a long time, but I'm Christian now because I got tired of the Council of Catholic Bishops trying to tell me, you need to vote Republican, that sort of thing. So I kind of ran away from the Catholics and found a nice, lovely little Lutheran church. They're delightful. I'm big fans of theirs. And I go pretty much, me and my family go pretty much every week to church. So we're churchgoers. And I'm not saying that I'm necessarily better or worse. It's just religion is a personal relationship. So you do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do. It's that simple. Now, I'm going to get into some religious content here, but I'm not trying to proselytize. I'm not trying to convert. I'm just going to bring this up because the Republicans all like to say, we're the most Christian people ever, which I love to mock because, once again, they seem to ignore for Christians. And once again, Christians are people who believe that Jesus Christ was God on earth again. They believe in Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. That's the story of Jesus. That's the story of his life. I mean, the rest of this stuff, like Romans and Thessalonians and the rest, these are stories that are being relayed basically about things after the fact. And of course, there's the Old Testament, which was there in existence too. But if you really believe in Jesus, well, the teachings of Jesus should actually have some influence on you. You know, that's just, call me wacky crazy. I know. Anywho, I'm going to read to you from one of the gospels that deals directly with Jesus's direct teachings to us Christians. And that is Matthew 25, 35, 40. And Matthew, that's a great name, by the way, just FYI. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when we not see you hungry or feed you or thirsty and give you something to drink, when did we see you as stranger and invite you in and needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick in prison and go to visit you? The king then replied, truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Oh, this is a passage. The Republicans hate this passage. They do. They really, I mean, as people that say, I love Jesus, and right, especially putting up that Christmas tree right after Halloween, the Gospel of Matthew is some hard-hitting truth on how far they have, you know, deviated, because it's very clear there. Now, I want to just run through the bullet points that JC put out here for a sec, okay? Hungry? Yeah, okay. Thirsty, all right. Strangers in strange lands, okay. Needed clothes, you were sick, you were in prison, you took care of the people who were prisoners. Listen to that list of 9-minute list I just did. Pretty much, I mean, the clothes thing is not there. And it's a little bit when you say to yourself, when he's talking about visiting prisoners and caring for people that are in jail versus necessarily restoring voter felon rights, but still we are looking out for the meekest of us all. The reality is that DFL bill you just passed is one of the most, that session is one of the most Christian sessions out there. And I get it. I understand there's some people like, Matt, you're ruining it. No, I'm not doing this because I'm trying to make you feel bad about it. I'm doing this because I want to make Republicans feel bad about it, okay? Because they're the ones that keep screaming, I'm the most religious person ever, as they talk about, let me tell you who to hate. And I say, you're doing it wrong. And that's just the way it is. That's just, you don't do it that way. So the reality is that if you're looking for the Christian message being reflected in legislative priorities, you need to thank the DFL because they just put out one of the most Christian-based legislative sessions ever. Ever. And as a matter of fact, I would make an argument that you want to go on out to all these red districts and put up on a billboard, read Matthew 25, 35 to 40, and then look at the list of accomplishments that the DFL just pulled off, and you tell me who's being the Christian representative, who's meeting those Christian ideals. Because they're not the Republicans. Unless Jesus all of a sudden had a moment and said, you know what I want to do? Tax cuts for billionaires. Is that in there? Is that Luke? I don't think that's Luke. Luke was actually much, he was much more condemning of wealth. Stuff like that. So, I don't think he did that. I could care less about them. I want a Hummer. I don't remember that passage from Jesus, You guys are out there talking about work requirements for welfare and stuff like that and how proud you are of that. I don't remember Jesus saying, okay, I'll tell you what, before you get the fishes and the loaves that I just made, how many jobs did you apply for today? You know, I don't remember him doing that. Can you pee in this cup? I don't remember Jesus doing that. But with a one quick wave of his hand, no, sorry. No. He did some miracles. Anyway, but you get my point. You get my point. There's a lot to be proud of here. And once again, that's not about forcing religion and religious beliefs upon anyone else. But taking care of the hungry, taking care of the sick, taking care of the thirsty, fixing those lead pipes in the state of Minnesota, trying to keep water clean across the state of Minnesota, welcoming in strangers from strange lands. Come on. If you really do live by your Christian values out there, Republicans, then you should be applauding these bills instead of fighting them and promising you're going to repeal them because Jeebus, that's what you keep saying. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. I'll get into some other things. When I do return, it is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
You know, the day destroys the night, night divides the day.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'm going to deal with the breaking news here, which is very tragic and very sad. There was a press conference today. The Fillmore County Sheriff, the Winona Police Chief, was the leader of this press conference. Body found in Fillmore County on Wednesday is that of Madeline Kingsbury. Authorities have indeed confirmed Kingsbury, a Winona mother of two, went missing nearly 70 days ago. During a press conference on Thursday, Winona Police Chief Tom Williams said the Southern Minnesota Regional Medical Examiner's Office have confirmed that it was Kingsbury's identity on the body that was found. While this discovery is not what we were hoping for, we were thankful to be able to bring Maddie home to her family, Williams says, as sobs could be heard in the council chambers. Adam Fravel, Kingsbury's ex-boyfriend and the father of her two children, was arrested on Wednesday in connection with second-degree murder. Deputies arrested Fravel without incident shortly before 5:30 p.m. at a home in Mabel, according to authorities. Kingsbury's body was discovered approximately 4 hours earlier, concealed in a wooded area off a nearby gravel road. The area had previously been searched over the course of the past 2 months, but Kingsbury's body was missed evidently due to the efforts taken to hide her body. During Thursday's press conference, authorities confirmed the property where Kingsbury's body was found is not owned by Fravel or any of his relatives, although his relatives do have a property that's several minutes away from that. Authorities have not yet determined Kingsbury's cause of death, though. Bonnie Bowman, a public information officer with the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, said authorities would not comment Thursday on any criminal charges being pursued in the investigation as part of the Protect the Integrity of the Future prosecution. In a statement to Fox 9, Kingsbury's dad, David Kingsbury, thanked investigators and volunteers for their extensive efforts. We are certain that the correct person has been arrested, will be charged and convicted of his crimes. Things are moving in the right direction there, and we look forward to getting justice for Madeline. For right now, we will mourn as my family and property, we'll mourn as a family and properly and respectfully lay her to rest, he wrote in part. So indeed, what had been suspected for a while that she had was indeed dead, it has been confirmed, and my guess is what we don't know is there probably is some substantial evidence to tie the ex-boyfriend to the scene. Authorities on Wednesday arrested Kingsbury's ex-boyfriend and the father of her two children, 29-year-old Adam Fravel. Fravel is being held in Winona County Jail on suspicion of second-degree murder, according to jail records. The Winona Police Department also confirmed Wednesday that human remains had been found. In a TikTok video Thursday morning, Kingsbury's sister, Megan Kingsbury, called Fravel's arrest a relief, and it's a long time coming. However, as of late Thursday morning, there's not been any official confirmation. They just did have the press conference confirming that it was indeed her body. Kingsbury went missing on March 31st after she and Fravel dropped their children off at a daycare that morning, according to police. Police said Kingsbury failed to show up for work at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, and she did not pick up her children from daycare later that day, nor did she make any arrangements for their care. According to police statements from early in the investigation, Fravel told investigators he left the home in Kingsbury's van around 10 a.m. that day and returned later to find that she was no longer home. Police revealed that the van, similar to Kingsbury's, was seen on cameras driving on County Road 12 and then southbound on Highway 43 through the eastern part of Fillmore County that morning. Investigators searched the van in her home. They found Kingsbury's phone, wallet ID, and a jacket she'd been wearing the morning of her disappearance. Almost 2 weeks after the 26-year-old went missing, Fravel issued a public statement through attorney, which he claimed no involvement in her disappearance. Back then, he had said, over the course of the last 12 days, my family and I have been subject to a myriad of accusations regarding the disappearance of the mother of my children, Maddie Kingsbury. During the last 12 days, I have cooperated with law enforcement at every turn, including sitting down for multiple interviews with Winona County law enforcement. I did not have anything to do with Maddie's disappearance. In early April, Winona County took custody of Kingsbury's two children. Fravel, who per his LinkedIn works as a software engineer, had no custodial rights to the children, and county workers found the children with Fravel at a family member's home. Fravel and his family didn't allow social workers access to the children. At one point, Fravel took the youngest child inside and locked the door while shouting expletives, according to the petition. The children were taken after Fravel called his attorney, and he and his family relented, according to CART documents. On Monday, Fravel agreed to a temporary custody agreement that keeps the children with Kingsbury's parents. The agreement states that the children aged 5 and 2 will stay with the grandparents for now, while Fravel files a formal custody petition, which that's not going to be filed now, for sure. Kingsbury family is filing for custody of the two children. It's sad and tragic. That is for sure. And I kind of get the impression. Okay. Once again, innocent until proven guilty, gets his day in court, all that stuff. We have to say that. We have to kind of make sure everyone understands. But if it does eventually come down how it sounds like it did, it sounds like this might've been a case where he wanted custody of the kids, and it wasn't her ex-husband, it was her ex-boyfriend. You know, it could be a case where she basically, you know, the agreement was that he was not going to have any custodial rights to him, could visit him and could see them. I mean, clearly there was. I mean, that was, they dropped him off at daycare. But it was a case where she would have the control over the children, and maybe it sounds like, is that what the motivation was? Was it, as some people have said, and this has been a tragic case, is this one of those cases where the ex-boyfriend says, you're not going to leave me or else, that sort of thing? Not sure. I'm sure the whole thing will come on out. I mean, it's. I guarantee you it will be a docuseries on, you know, Dateline or Netflix or something of that nature before too long, because it's kind of made, as far as crime was made for that sort of thing. They'll tell that story there. I will also point out to, if you're thinking of committing a crime, it should be noted that this person, this Fillmore County where this was found, it was not really near his house. But even there in rural Fillmore County, cameras caught the van driving around. And this idea, and I've talked about this in regards to crimes committed at the Mall of America or in Edina. They already know who you are, where your car is, who owns the car, where that car is registered. They have followed you via the cameras everywhere. And that's not just, I mean, it's not any longer. I mean, I remember when I worked for Metro Traffic years ago, and we used to have these discussions about the morality of the traffic cameras, because, I mean, we are basically, is it Big Brother staring at the innocent civilians? And of course, the police and fire and emergency will all say, well, it's a necessary tool so that you can basically, you know, go on out there and see what is going on and people could see it. I made the argument that whenever Dick Cheney came into town and I was working at Metro Traffic, they would turn the cameras away to prevent people from seeing any, the entire like South Metro's cameras would all turn away. So no one could even see his vehicle. I said, that doesn't sound like, you know, allowing the people to see what's going on. So it's, you know, there's both sides of that case, but that was then, that was 15 years ago. How many neighbors in your neighborhood have a video doorbell and a clear view of the street in front of you? Because that doorbell picks it up. And so you may say to yourself, I'll even take back roads. I'll take residential streets. I'll take this. They know exactly where you are. I guarantee you. Security cameras on buildings, doorbell cameras, street cameras. They know exactly where you're at. And it's gotten to the point now where even here in rural Minnesota, they were able to, they once again, they had searched this area multiple times already because they knew his van had was somewhere, or a van, his van or some a van that was very similar to his van was in that area at the time of the disappearance. And so they had already searched that area quite a bit. So it is, you know, they kind of honed in on him early. Oh, and by the way, can I also make sure I also point out something like this? I don't know if you're aware of what goes on nowadays with your little cell phone, but the way that some people have told me they do this is that say that they find out in a rural part of a country a body. And they estimate, okay, this body's been here for 12 hours. They have the ability to find out whose phone dinged off of whose cell phone tower in that area 12 hours earlier. They're going to find you. Now, once again, innocent until proven guilty, he will get his day in court. That is the law. That's how it what works. But my guess is going to be that there's a lot more evidence that we are not aware of that has not been shared that is going to come to light on this. And I'm going to be surprised if this court case goes to trial. I'd be surprised if it's as I suspect, this is going to be, I think, a fairly quick settlement. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break a little bit early here. Come on back and wrap up hour number one. When we do return, it is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. 05 is the phone number. Man, a lot of stories to get to today I think I'm going to start, finish out this hour with the story of, and this actually, there had to be a fix on this. I don't know if you caught this. Dina Winter had a story about police payouts, misconduct payouts. And the source is it Professor Schultz, who we've had on the air here from Hamline University. He was off by $100 million, I think. So yeah, they had to correct it here. The report was an error regarding the total payouts of Minneapolis by $100 million. But still, I'm going to – let's go through this because this is not exactly a stellar report per se. A new report found more than $60 million had been shelled out by Minnesota cities and counties for 495 police misconduct cases from 2010 to 2020. $60 million in taxpayer dollars. $60 million in taxpayer dollars. Of the 71 jurisdictions that reported payouts. Now, and by the way, can I say this? This isn't some namby-pamby who's just complaining about what's going on. No, this is people who've gone out there and either have proven their accusations against the police of misconduct, or they basically took a settlement because they knew it wasn't going to go well. So this isn't just allegations. There is actual fire here. There's not just smoke, all right? Of the 71 jurisdictions that reported payouts, Minneapolis, which sparked international outrage when police officers killed George Floyd in 2020, accounted for 177 of the 495 payouts for a total of $36 million. By the way, that doesn't include the 2021 payout to Floyd's family totaling $27 million, or the other significant payouts since 2020, including $1.5 million to Jaleel Stallings for the beating he took after being mistakenly fired, misfiring at Minneapolis police officers who basically attacked him like a street gang. So, yeah, just and so I guess maybe what we should do is we should look back at the last decade as the quaint payout time for $36 million because, yeah, I got to believe we're already by 2023 in this 10-year segment already past that. Unbelievable. By the way, Bloomington had the next most payouts, 126, followed by 47 for St. Paul. I'm a little surprised by that because of the 177 for Minneapolis, 126 for Bloomington. I didn't realize they'd have that many problems for calls down there in Bloomington. So, Hamline University professor David Schultz and his students, with support from government transparency nonprofit Public Records Media, collected data from 239 Minnesota entities and found nearly 30% reported paying money for misconduct cases. There are millions of police-civilian interactions every year, and most occur without incident. Schultz said in a press release, "We cannot make good policy unless we first know what the scope of the problem is." Could agree with that. Over 40% of the incidents lack detail explaining the type of misconduct, though, and nearly 89% of those happened in Minneapolis. Of the 40% of incidents, I want to repeat that because I think this is an important element of the story and just tells you everything you need to know about the pre-O'Hara Minneapolis police, the Bob Kroll, the Delmonico police. 40% of the incidents statewide for the last 10 years, or the 10 years between 2010 and 2020, lacked detail explaining the type of misconduct. Of those, 89% of those happened in Minneapolis. So of the ones where we don't know exactly what the misconduct is, almost a shocking amount of them happened in Minneapolis. They won't tell you the details of the misconduct that happened there. Minneapolis stood out in terms of the number of incidents and amount paid, even though the city compromised just 7% of the state's population in 2010 and 7.5% in 2020. Now, we're not talking about the metro area. We're just talking about the city itself, the city proper. Minnesota clearly had more of each as a percentage of the state than its population should warrant, Schultz said. Oh, tell me something I don't know. Schultz said there is no mandatory reporting of payouts for cases where people sue officers and their employees for things like property damage, excessive force, and civil rights violations. He said he hopes the report leads to mandated uniform reporting on payouts, which I think is a good idea. Hamline surveyed 149 cities, or about half of those they call the police department, and of all the states, counties, many of which provide policing for small cities and don't have police departments as well. So, I think we should know this is going on because I think it tells you there is a significant problem if all of a sudden, as Schultz and crew found out, there's a substantial amount of problem coming from one city or two cities in particular. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We haven't heard from him in a while. David is in San Francisco, California. He wanted to chime in on this issue. Hey, David.
Hey, thanks, Matt. I remember, I'm trying to remember if it was before or at the beginning of COVID, there was a scandal involving Chicago and that they had paid out $60 million. And I'm trying to, the numbers that you were quoting were cities far smaller than Chicago. And I'm just wondering, when you start doing comparative for the size of the city and the size of those payouts, I mean, that's some magnificent police bad training or corruption or whatever you'd want to describe it as.
Malfeasance. How about we say malfeasance?
Sure. But, it was $60 million in a year that Chicago had paid out for settlements. And I'm trying to remember how many million people Chicago has got compared to Was it Minneapolis that you were?
And that was just Minneapolis proper. Brett, can you type in Chicago proper and find out what the population of Chicago?
That's a good point, because Chicago proper is bigger than Minneapolis proper.
And that was 60. Yeah. Now, once again, that's 60 for that year, right? You were saying it was 60 million for the year. This is for 10 years. So that's a little bit different. It's not necessarily a fair comparison on that. But what we can say about that 10-year stretch, and once again, the thing we have to be careful of is this is pre-George Floyd and all the problems there. And there have been tons of payouts since that. So this next 10 years are going to really look bad for Minneapolis. What's the population?
So Minneapolis, we're about 430,000. Chicago is 2.7 million.
2.7 million. So they're basically, math is correct, it's basically 6.5 times. The size. And for our payouts for Minneapolis in the 10 years was $36 million for the 10 years. You know, Chicago, Chicago's actually probably going to be a little bit worse. Just I'm just running the numbers, David, in my head as we do this, because it's, 6.5 times worse, but this is over 10 years. So Chicago, I think, would look a little bit worse than us. But still, at that same rate, you're looking at a city that is 6.5 there. And once again, we had one payout for the George Floyd family of $27 million. And we are in 2023. We have another 7 years to go in this decade. So I can't even comprehend how much it's going to be. But I'm going to guess that this next 10-year period that Minneapolis would actually catch up with Chicago under your argument.
Sure. Hey, well, just a quote or, a catchphrase, justice is cost-effective and injustice is expensive.
I couldn't agree more, and thank you. David, I got to cut you off there. Good points, man. It's always nice when the listeners put me in Matt's math corner really quick. Keep me on my toes. We'll take a break. Coming back, hour number two. That's coming up next. Hour number two of the show here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, Matt McNeil Show. Matt and Brett here today. 952-946-6205. I got to tell you what here. We don't generally start with too much sports here. I will say the Twins lost today. 3 runs in 3 games. All of them solo home runs. Fire the freaking batting coach. You've got too many good players on that team. You don't have slumps like this. Someone is telling them to do stuff they shouldn't be doing. So fire the batting coach. And if you have to, I guess maybe we have to start having the discussion of firing Rocco.
Well, 77 wins, I think, is still going to win the division, which is pathetic. So they could. I'm with you. They're not good, but who else is going to win that division?
Well, the point is not to win the division. It's to win a first-round playoff series. And right now, considering we're not going to have to play anyone in the American League Central in the first round, we're going to lose, probably in 3 games, and we're going to have the same people come on out and say, gee willikers, golly gosh, what a great season, American League Central champs. And the reality is, and I'll stand by this statement, I don't care how much it makes some people mad, Ron Gardenhire would have that team at 20 games more, he already have 20 more wins this season than Rocco does. I'm dead serious. He'd have 20 more freaking wins already. Maybe not 20, maybe 10. 20 would be pretty astounding.
They wouldn't be striking out as much. I saw stat where they're like on pace, I think, to break a major league record for strikeouts in a season by a team.
At what point, Twins, do you not look at this and say, hey, maybe someone's giving them some bad advice considering they're swinging like there's baseball players in a Looney Tunes cartoon. 1, 2, 3, you're out. 1, 2, 3, you're out. Actually, they don't swing. They watch strike one, and then they decide to watch strike two for good sakes. And then they say, well, I got one strike left. I'm not going to, strike three, I'm gone. Okay, all right, bye. That's what we have. How about something good in the sports realm? Saw this story here. Now, if you go back and you look at Barry Alvarez in Wisconsin, do you remember how bad the Wisconsin Badger football team was for so many years?
Oh, yeah. It made the Gophers look like a national powerhouse back in the 80s.
They were horrible. And they brought in Barry Alvarez. What was Barry Alvarez's first thing that he said? Do you remember?
I do not know.
He said, we are going to keep the Wisconsin kids in Wisconsin. He said, our best players are leaving the state and they're going to play for other schools. And he basically just made that commitment that the best players in the state play for the major college in the state. And that was part of it. And he turned it around very quickly. Minnesota, we have had the same problem. We have watched our best players. There's a reason why, you know, North Dakota State and South Dakota State and South Dakota and these football team, there's these football teams that are out there. They're pulling out all of our big players. PJ Fleck has learned something. Wyatt Gilmore knows that his hard sell is coming. When the standout defensive end from Rodgers makes his official visit to the Gophers football team this weekend, he's well aware that plenty of people will encourage him to commit to Minnesota, and that's not only Coach PJ Fleck and his staff. I have a really strong relationship with a ton of guys on the team and pretty much all the commits, said Gilmore, a four-star recruit, the top-ranked player in the state in the 2024 recruiting class. They tell me a couple subtle things here and there. Over the next two Summer Splash weekends, Gilmore will be one of roughly 25 recruits making their official visits. The Gophers have 15 players who have verbally committed to the class. Fleck is doing a solid job of keeping Minnesota's best players at home, according to a recruiting-focused website. Seven of the top nine recruits in Minnesota have committed to the Gophers. That's what you got to have. You got to have that. The list includes number two-ranked Coy Parrish, a safety from Lincoln, in Esco, number four, Mason Carrier, the linebacker from Detroit Lakes. Jidi Absari, the defensive lineman for Prior Lake. Forgive me if I'm mispronouncing that. Mo Sain, the number defensive lineman from Eden Prairie. Simon Seidel, the athlete from Hill Murray. Jalen Smith, the wide receiver from Mankato West. And Sam Macy, the edge rusher from Chanhassen. Two of the top nine who have not committed to Minnesota are slated to visit Gilmore, number three ranked in the state. Recruit Emerson Mandel, an offensive lineman from Irondale High School. So, by the way, this Gilmore kid is nationally ranked as far as his position goes. So what do you think the chances? I mean, he's doing the right thing. I mean, you know sports better than I do, man. It seems like this is your foundation. Now you go out there and get a few of these guys from Florida and Georgia and California and Texas.
I'm thrilled about that. It's good news for the Gopher football team. I wish the basketball team would do the same because Minnesota, like the past 10 years, has just been a mecca for like high school basketball and nothing. They're not keeping any of their players.
No, they're not.
Football is at least doing a little better job keeping our players.
I mean, you have one of the most iconic stadiums in college basketball. You've got a program that's got a lot of prestige to it. Hasn't won the national championship, but they've had some success over the years. Yeah, I'm sorry. I agree with you. I mean, you got to keep the kids here, and I get it. It's hard when a big name powerhouse basketball school comes in and says, "Well, we've got let me tell you something. As a person that used to work with college sports, there's a lot of buying of players. Especially when, I won't say what college is, but I went down to visit some of the colleges in the conference that the college I helped cover was in. And the first thing the people said to me is like, well, if you're in a state college, basically they can bury any expense into those files and they will never find it. And so that they were buying off players left and right to keep them down there. As long if it's a state school, guess what? They're getting there. It's easy. It's easy to get that. So 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'll tell you what, I'll bring in Stan here. Stan is in Chanhassen. He wanted to chime in on Polymet. Go ahead, Stan.
Yeah, apparently the other day, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, the Army Corps of Engineers, I don't know the exact term used, but they basically negated Polymet's permit to work on the mining there. And the basis was because they failed to take into consideration tribal land. And the permit did not meet the standards that the tribe had imposed for environmental review.
Stan, if just really quick, I'm going to step in here because I'm going to let you have the floor again here in a second. But to tell you that good minds think alike here, here's the story. The U.S. This was one that I had brought up today I was going to bring up. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has revoked the key discharge permit for the Project Vine to become Minnesota's first copper nickel mine because it does not ensure compliance with the water quality standards of the downstream Fond du Lac Ban of Lake Superior, Chippewa. And once the thing in, it was... The thing which was very disturbing, especially about guys like Stauber and other Republicans, was that even though the Native American tribes are supposed to be sovereign and have their own rules, they were basically, the mentality is punch it through, have them violate all the rules, and in 20 years when the courts come back and say, well, you violated the rules, say, well, gee willikers, golly gosh, and good on the Army Corps of Engineers who came on out and said, we're not going to let this go to a court, we're just not going to approve this because you're not respecting the Fond du Lac Band. And so you have to respect them and their wishes.
Well, in the month before they made that decision, though, there was a court case at the federal courthouse in Minnesota where Fond du Lac basically had to invoke its treaty rights to stop this from happening. So I don't know if it's just coincidence that the Corps of Engineers revoked it, but Fond du Lac sued the PolyMet people saying that, hey, you didn't take into account that we own almost 7,000 acres of public land and you're violating Article 11 of our treaty. So it seems to me that it's either a startling coincidence or the Army Corps was waiting for the federal court to make that decision.
Well, and needless to say, it's not going to happen right now. And Stan, right. And Stan, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call here today. It's not going to happen now, at least not here. But, okay, first of all, if I can go back, I wasn't going to necessarily talk about this issue, but let me talk about this in another water issue as well that came up. When Line 3 was coming through, I made the point here, and I said this, you know, guys, why don't we just do ourselves a favor? In 20 years after you guys have polluted the living daylights out of northern Minnesota and the Mississippi River and all the things you said you weren't going to do, you end up doing, which is pouring, you know, the dirtiest and most disgusting kind of oil all over northern Minnesota. And gee willikers, golly gosh. And they come back and they say, well, yeah, you clearly violated all this stuff. And all you Republicans put on your fake, oh my gosh, they told us they were going to do this safely. Holy wow, they sure betrayed us. Now, we're going to let them off the hook so they don't have to clean it up, but the taxpayers do. But boy, did we learn our lesson. And in 20 years after that, when you guys set up the monument to the Native Americans and the other water crusaders who are trying to stop this travesty from happening, that saying, gee, they were right the entire time. You know, it just, why don't we avoid that? I think we can all say, I'd rather not have the memorial in 80 years saying how wrong you were and how right we were, and you just don't do it. How about we get to that point? Heaven forbid. But it does highlight, and once again, if I can, white America, listen to me, I'm a white guy, okay? When you start looking at the historical context of how the Native Americans have been treated, once again, their sovereignty, the treaties they have, are supposed to supersede the Constitution. They have their way. They can do this. They can invoke these things. This is their rights. And yet we have continually said, well, we're going to ignore this and allow this to go happen. And then 20 years later say, gee willikers, who allowed this and let this to happen? And then 40 years later, we built a memorial for the people that told us we shouldn't have done this. And when we created this environmental disaster, we wanted to let them have a little bit of an honor to say, yeah, oh boy, were we wrong and were you right? How about we just avoid that problem? And this is doing that. Just don't build the damn thing. Just do not build it. You don't have to build it. We don't want it. Heck, they have an argument from Arne Carlson. Did you see that on Reformer? He's Arne Carlson, the Republican governor. He basically doesn't want these mines put out there. No, we don't want them. Stauber does, because I'm going to guess he's in the pocket of, is this the Swiss mining conglomerate, the Chilean mining conglomerate, or the Canadian mining conglomerate? It's one of the two. Does he still have his Antofagasta tramp stamp on his, never mind. I need to correct this. I think before legal gets down here, flying down the stairs into the studio. We have no knowledge on whether or not Pete Stauber has an Antofagasta tram stamp on the lower back of his back. I have no idea if he does. He might. He might not. We have no idea. It could be a tram stamp for another international mining conglomerate. I don't know. Kind of like NASCAR. But I would. It would be hilarious if a guy like bent down one day and it's like, oh my God, he does have a drift. Anyway, I have no idea. I'm presuming a sitting member of the House. Well, I can't say that now with Marjorie Taylor Greene. I don't know if anyone has never mind. I'll presume I don't know. We'll have to agree to disagree, huh? I have no knowledge of whether he has one or not. The 27-page decision released on Tuesday by Colonel Eric Swenson, Director Commanders of the Army Corps St. Paul District, wrote that it was revoking the project's Section 404 permit, which allowed the company to discharge dredging and fill material into over 900... Oh, pardon me here. Quick second as I shuffle through my briefs. Section 404 allowed the company to discharge dredging or fill material over 900 acres of wetlands. God, who thought this was a good idea in the first place, man? With the finding that there are currently no conditions that can ensure compliance with the water quality requirements of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, I have determined that revocation of the subject DA permit would be in the public's interest, Swenson wrote. Thank God. It's the little thing sometimes, isn't it? Native American friends, if I can, I can get how you're like, you might be shocked. Like, what? They followed through? Wow. Don't worry. I'm sure that the Republicans are trying to find some way to basically, well, we're going to sue around this. In the statement, the Fond du Lac Bear chairman, Kevin Dupuy Sr., said the Army Corps decision was the right one as it upheld treaty promises made by the U.S. to the band, noting the 1854 treaty promised permanent homeland to its people downstream from the project. We were also promised the ability to exercise our traditional hunting, fishing, and gathering rights within our aboriginal lands. We were ceded under the 1854 treaty, where the project will be located. Despite these solemn promises by the United States, our reservation and our ceded territory lands have been under attack from pollution in decades. Today's decision protects the rights and resources promised to us under the treaty. It's the least we can do. New Range, which is apparently, is this the PolyMet? They've changed their name from PolyMet now. The New Range, it's a joint venture between PolyMet and Tech, formed early this year. That's right. They had to change their name because I think that their name had kind of burned bad. So, they all of a sudden trying to rebrand themselves like, you know, Meta or something like that. Or, you know, when Elon has to rebrand Twitter or something else because it's absolutely tanking. In a news release, New Range says it was reviewing all of our options as we chart a course forward for the development of the North Met project in a safe and environmentally responsible manner that considers New Range's communities of interest. Can I ask you something? Funny thing about your statement, it doesn't mention the Native Americans' rights to have this. It's like, hey, we want to make sure that we follow their rights and their wishes. I don't see that in this whole thing. I see you basically saying, we're going to try to do something here. The company touted its proposed wastewater treatment process and said it would reduce mercury and sulfite entering the St. Louis River watershed. Reduce, not remove. That's a big difference. And we're talking about mercury and sulfate. They didn't say if they're going to seek legal action or reapply for the permit. But those liberal wokes, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and their building and research and math. Wokey, 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 woke, woke, woke. Oh, you are the most woke Army Corps of Engineers I've ever seen in my life. How dare you? I do have a tramp stamp. I'm not going to tell you which international company it is, but I do like chocolate bars. I will just say that. So it's going to be right there. You have to imagine the glory. 952-946-6205. I will take a break. Come on back. My second water story when I do return. And I will also get to that Supreme Court ruling that came on down. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. That was some good news in regards to water. And I will say this, it is, you know, it's because this is going to be a theme for this hour, I think. It's going to be, hey, it's the least they could do. But I guess in this day and age, we should be celebrating when they do the least they can do. Here's the bad story. Removing forever chemicals from Minnesota's wastewater streams will cost anywhere from $14 billion to $28 billion over the next 20 years, according to a new report. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency on Tuesday announced the publication of the report, saying the first of its kind study highlights the unaffordable cost of cleaning up per and poly the PFASs. The use of that. I mean, that's what we have to get out of the water there. The independent study was commissioned by the MPCA as part of the Minnesota's PFAS blueprint, which is the state's plan to prevent and manage and clean up PFAS pollution. According to MPCA estimates, PFASs can be bought for $50 to $1,000 per pound, but cost between $2.7 million and $18 million per pound to remove and destroy them from municipal wastewater. Wow. Oh, my God. Listen to that ratio. To buy PFASs, you can buy per pound, depending on which kind you get, it's $50 to $1,000. But to get that same product out of the water costs $2.7 million and $18 million, depending on the compounds, per pound to remove and destroy from municipal wastewater, depending on the facility size. For example, small wastewater treatment facilities would face costs over six times greater than large facilities per pound due to economics of scale, the study found. Wow, what a mess. The exorbitant costs associated with removing PFASs from community wastewater systems underscores the need to address PFASs pollution long before it gets into a waste stream, said MPCA Commissioner Katrina Kessler. At the no fault of their own, wastewater treatment facilities receive PFASs from a variety of sources, and they cannot carry the burden of cleaning up the pollution. We must focus on preventing PFASs from entering the environment in the first place. And that's, I think, the case. And I believe, as part of my long list that I began the show with, one of those is that they are banned in Minnesota, I believe, starting in 2025. They should be banned everywhere. You know, it's funny. It's kind of tragic, if you want to know the truth. I remember getting into an argument with one of these people that was accusing vaccines of giving people autism. And what I said to them was, whether or not there are outside, you know, outside of genetics and, you know, DNA code that lead to this, if there are things, you have narrowed your search down so dramatically that you can't possibly factor in all the things that could be giving people problems. And I just said, you know, and my example I made to them was deodorant. Go pick, how long do you think your deodorant that you buy has been tested on human beings for safe usage? How long? 3 weeks? A month? 2 months? Not the 6 years, 7 years, 8 years most people use a product. So you don't really know. And then when you tie that product in with another product that were never necessarily intended to be together, say it's floor cleaner and deodorant or this, we don't even know. And that's the point I made back then. And then you find out there's all these forever chemicals in the water and everything. And that basically every animal on the planet has got these forever chemicals in this. This byproduct that is out there of us in our modern day convenient society. And that it is, I can tell you right now, we're probably on the cusp of finding out how bad this is for us and how much damage this is doing to our bodies. Particularly, my guess would be, just judging from how this stuff goes, neurological damage that this is doing. We have the stuff out there. For God's sakes. Due to climate change, we got the eastern coast of the United States completely fogged in smoke. People don't want to look at that and say, well, this is a problem. Of course it's a problem. Of course it is. We have, Mike, have you ever gone into a town and then the reeking smell of their local factory? Cloquet used to be bad, man. And you think about, you're living there, and that's in your environment every single day. There might indeed be health consequences for our modern lifestyle, but I think only a fool would look necessarily, well, first of all, would ignore a lot of evidence that, you know, genetics and DNA have far more to do with certain things than others. But the reality is, if you're looking for external causes of issues, pick a lane, for goodness sakes. Pick a lane. We all have, you know, everything from microwaves to cleaning chemicals. Pick a lane. And the real damages we're doing is, for our convenience, we've embraced some of these products without even beginning to ask the question of, is this a good idea? And in the case of PFASs, it clearly wasn't. My God, what was the cancer rate of that high school out in the east side of the metro because of the 3M chemicals? Do you remember that?
A lot of students that were affected by it, or former students.
Cancer. Young kids getting cancer. I would make an argument we cannot get the PFASs out of our environment fast enough. But I'm sure the Dakotas and Iowa and Wisconsin will probably, hey, we're going to still use it. Yeah. 952-946-6205. All right, down from the Supreme Court today when we do return here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. A little surprised here. The Supreme Court, and a lot of people had speculated that the Supreme Court was going to gut the Voting Rights Act with this court case. And instead, they actually reaffirmed the Voting Rights Act, at least in this specific thing. And once again, this was something that had already been, and give you an idea of what the conservatives on the court are trying to do. They're trying to get do-overs on almost all of these rulings, because then they're just going to go in there and say, even though there's no legal precedent for us to do this, we just don't like this, so we're going to undo it. I mean, nothing sizes this up more than Gorsuch's ruling on the prayer on the football field, which they had evidence that basically everyone had to be there, and he said, oh, it was a small little prayer group. And he ignored they just outright ignored the facts of the case as it was presented, just so they could say you can force people to pray for a Christian God on a public football field. And yeah, I mean, it's that's what they want. And when Thomas, after they went and struck down Roe v. Wade, told them, bring us every one of these cases back, we'll knock them down. That's exactly what they were talking about. Now, there could be an interesting argument that Kavanaugh and Roberts might be the only thing saving the Republican Party from getting voted into oblivion. Because, and I would make an argument, this is that you cannot deny that the reason why Republicans have had a lot of problems lately is especially this last election cycle. And I was just looking at Cook's political report. They're starting to gauge a lot of Republican, safe Republican seats into leans Republican and toss up. And that should be scaring the daylights out of Republicans. They're doing this because basically the Supreme Court did something that it generally has not done too much to the entire masses. It's done to Native Americans and others over the years in the history of this country. But they basically in mass took away everyone's rights in regards to being able to manage their own health and their own health decisions. And they took away everyone's rights on that. And that has come back to bite them badly. I would make an argument Roberts and Kavanaugh do not want to give more kindling to the fire. And so that would be my guess. But this was a surprise. The ruling states that Alabama did indeed violate the Voting Rights Act by diluting the black vote when it drew new congressional maps following the 2020 census. The 5-4 decision written by Chief Justice John Roberts found that Alabama Republicans improperly denied black communities a second congressional district by packing them into one district and splitting them into other majority white districts. The district was joined by the decision was joined by the liberal judges Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, and Ketanji Brown Jackson, as well as conservative Justice Brett Kavanaugh. The decision in Allen versus Milligan comes as a shock as the court's conservatives have repeatedly gutted the Voting Rights Act in cases over the past decade, including the Shelby County versus Holder, Brnovich versus the Democratic National Committee. In his decision, Roberts firmly rejected Alabama's arguments in favor of a new race-neutral standard to govern racial gerrymandering cases brought under the Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act as novel. The heart of these cases is not about how the law as it exists, Roberts wrote. It's about Alabama's attempt to remake our Section 2 jurisprudence anew. Alabama will now be required to redraw its congressional district map to provide for a second majority black district. The decision will have extended consequences, too, as both plaintiffs in Louisiana and Georgia claim similar racial discrimination in redistricting in cases that were pending in the Supreme Court. This could lead to the creation of a new black majority district in each state. And as a matter of fact, in these states where they're going to have to redraw these districts, those states as well, Cook for Political Report just said, oh, yeah, that one of them now, I think one in North Carolina now leans Democrat. So good luck.
Yeah, he switched like four or five of these. Yeah, that went from toss-up to, yeah, lean Democrat.
Yeah. Alabama will now be required to redraw its congressional district map to provide for a second majority black district. And like I said, it's going to affect other states as well that have pending cases. The case came about after Alabama Republicans, who dominate the state's politics, drew a national congressional district map that cracked the black community across the historic Black Belt, named for its soil, splitting the predominantly black city of Montgomery into three majority white congressional districts while packing the rest of the state's black community into the 7th district. Since black people make up 27% of the state's population, the map appeared to dilute the black vote by not drawing a second black majority district. Black Alabamans, the Alabama chapter of the NAACP and Greater Birmingham Ministries, filed a lawsuit alleging the map violated Section 2 of the 16-5 Voting Rights Act. The federal district court agreed that the plaintiffs, by turning the Supreme Court precedent in the 1986 case of Thornburg versus Jingles. Jingles? Was this a North Pole case?
I'm Jingles the Elf, and I got to tell you something about the way that they redistricted my voting district against that evil clause. I got to tell you right now.
Will the defendant, Jingles, please approach the bench?
Jingles. When he walks up, oh, that would have been a heck of a case. In Jingles, that's how they refer to the case, too. In Jingles, the court laid out a framework to govern how courts should judge Section 2 racial vote distribution cases. The framework demanded that Section 2 racial vote dilution cases meet three tests to prove that an additional majority-minority seat is warranted. The test required plaintiffs to show that the minority population is, first, sufficiently large and geographically compact, second, politically cohesive, and that they vote as a block, and third, that the majority and minority populations are politically polarized. And the district court found that the Alabama case met all those three of those cases from the Jingles framework. Yeah, okay, I'm not going to get past that. That's just not. And we should note that this is also something that in Texas they have done with the city of Austin. They basically broke Austin into, what, 8 different congressional districts to dilute the Austin vote and basically, you know, turn it into a, you know, just, you know, this portion of Austin. And the thing which is funny is people go down there, Republicans don't even go into Austin because it's so clearly designed. And so, yeah, you get this. Clearly, the fix is in. The state of Alabama appealed during the courts should overturn the Jingles precedent and affirm a new standard that judges voting rights cases on race-neutral basis. The race-neutral approach would draw its decision. But you see, this is the thing which is really disgusting about what they did in Alabama. They want to make an argument that, well, you shouldn't judge this on race, as they themselves have drawn their maps based on race. The whole point of their map was to basically make it to where the Democrats only get one seat as opposed to just 2 out of a state, which I think has 6. So, yeah, it's, you know, is that the most Republican thing ever right now? Is that basically accuse the other person of doing exactly what you're trying to do? Roberts rejected these arguments and affirmed the court's prior precedent of Jingles. By doing so, he stated that the district court's decision showing that Alabama map violated Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act was correct. The contention that map makers must entirely be blind to race has no footing in our Section 2 case law, Roberts wrote. So basically, four of these Supreme Court justices just ruled that it did, even though there was nothing to argue. Once again, I want to go back to the first thing I said. These conservatives there are not about established law and precedent. They basically wanted to go in there and rewrite the law as the Alabama Republicans wanted them to rewrite the law. And they're furious that that did not happen. The state also argued the court should stop hearing Section 2 racial gerrymandering cases together altogether by claiming both that the Civil Rights Act does not apply to single-member districts and also that the 15th Amendment forbids race-based redistricting. Roberts rejected both of those arguments as opposing the court's decades-long precedents, which once again, the Republican majority there is, for the most part, there to knock down. In upholding the court's precedent in Jingles, Roberts recounted the history of how a bipartisan law passed by Congress in 1992 forced the court to accept the use of non-explicit racial discrimination in Section 2 cases. In 1980, the court ruled in the city of Mobile versus Bolden that racial gerrymandering cases brought under Section 2 could only succeed if they showed evidence of explicit racial discrimination. The decision provoked as political firestorm as Congress eventually enacted a law overriding the out court by stating that Section 2 cases can succeed if they show a disparative negative impact rather than just explicit racism. The court then revised its Section 2 jurisprudence in Jingles, which makes Thursday's decision so surprising that Roberts, a staffer of Reagan's, fiercely opposed the 1982 law that overrode the court's opinion in the city of Mobile. He counseled Reagan as opposed to the law as it moved through Congress in that time. The dissenters, Thomas, Alito, Gorsuch, and Barrett, would have the other way. Thomas, in a solo dissent, reiterated his fierce opposition to the court's long deplorable precedents on Section 2. Now, I want to make sure we understand exactly what Clarence Thomas is saying here. He doesn't like it. The legal precedent has been long established. That's what Roberts is saying. Roberts is saying, as much as I might not like this, the legal precedent is established, and it's this. What Thomas is saying is, I don't like it, and so I want to undo it. And if there is any other reason in the world that you do not freaking take any more elections off, it's that. Until that clown and Alito and Gorsuch and Barrett and, well, and frankly, Kavanaugh too, until they're all gone, you can't take any elections off. You can't. You can't. You just can't. At the outset, I would resolve these cases. This is Clarence Thomas. At the outset, I would resolve these cases in a way that would not require the federal judiciary to decide the correct racial opponent of Alabama's congressional seats. So basically saying, I'm going to let anyone draw up the rules any way they want to. But the court did not follow Thomas's lead to overturn Jingles. Thomas really has it in for Jingles. I don't know. He really hates Jingles, man. Why do you hate Jingles so much? Jingles seems like a nice guy. Seems like a nice fella. I said this at the beginning of the show, and I want to be very careful here because I do understand I'm a white guy. So me sometimes commenting on some things I got to be careful with. But, I mean, I do have to ask the question, Is Clarence Thomas just kind of like a quieter version of Kanye West, where it's basically, it's just there's a far uglier underbelly of what's going on. I mean, this Harlan guy is just Johnny Nazi. I mean, he's got all this Nazi stuff, man. And he hangs out with him all the time. This is just me. If I walked into someone's house and there was a Nazi flag on the wall, and it wasn't because Grandpa pulled that, you know, when he took the hill, captured that flag and that was his, okay, I get that to a point. But if it's put up there in like a freaking altar, no. We're done hanging out, dude. I'm not, no. I don't like Nazis. I don't like Nazis. By the way, this it does tell you once again. And by the way, if you haven't seen it, Kavanaugh and Roberts are taking a lot of heat from conservatives who are like, "How dare you? We're supposed to get this thing fixed." It does highlight, I'm going to take a break and I'm going to come on back. I want to highlight the fact that the Republican Party is, to a point, they're so lost right now because this is all they want to do, but they're starting to realize that if they continue down this path, they are going to go to the road of the Whigs. And I don't like that because I don't want just one party rule in this country. I don't think that does any good for anybody. But at the same time, the Republicans are only doing this to themselves because they became, in the last 25 years, addicted to basically appealing to the most extremist elements of this country. And until they can break that, well, they're going to have problems. I'll talk more about that when I do return. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. So, okay, I pointed out last hour when we brought down the list of things, I want to remind where were Republicans last October? We're going to jam our agenda down those liberals' throats. The Republican Party has not been a party of compromise, bipartisanship, or moderation in decades. They've just not. And their expectation, because they have played to this most extreme part of the country, is that it's their way or the highway, which now I'm going to echo in the Supreme Court story. Why are all the conservatives mad at Roberts and Kavanaugh? Because it doesn't matter what legal precedent is. You're there to basically undo all this stuff and make this a conservative Republican mecca. And they're upset. Same thing goes for what's gone on with Speaker McCarthy. Fringe members of the House Republican Conference were so furious with McCarthy that they're now considering payback time, said New York Magazine's Ben Jacobs on Thursday. This week, Republicans rebelled. There was concern that when McCarthy allowed the rule changes that allow a single member to trigger a vote that could remove him from power, the hard right would harness that opportunity. Instead, they've seized control of the House to block pro-gas stove bill. Republicans had begun a campaign to save their old gas stoves after a study said that having them in a home could cause increased health problems for children with asthma. And a Consumer Product Safety Commission member suggested that products that be made safer than any products that could be made that they can't should be banned. But even a strident war against President Joe Biden's administration takes a backseat to the internal war between the right and the far right. They are furious that McCarthy had bucked them and their demands for a deep spending cuts in order to get the Democratic support on the debt ceiling deal, wrote Jacobs. The result is that the business of the House ground to a halt with rebels such as rebels. How about idiots? How about let's not call them rebels. Rebels makes them sound cool. Let's call them morons like Getz and Boebert. We hold the floor. After that, without all these hard right Republicans, McCarthy has no majority and things weren't going to get any easier in the future. This is why I said to Dean Phillips, Dean, why are you saying you're going to help support his keeping him in the speaker's chair? Because if he gets bounced, And this has got to be I got to be honest with you. The reason I think that none of these far-right Republicans have called for him to be removed as Speaker is because they know that there's not going to be enough Democrats to offset them. And so they might end up with a Democratic Speaker. Because I guarantee you, the Democrats are not going to vote. I don't think Scalise, I don't think Jim Jordan, I don't think any of those guys want it. I don't think they do. Tom Emmer? Maybe, but I mean, he'd be jumping some people in prior seniority, and I don't think that they like that idea at all. After all, without the hard right Republicans, McCarthy has majority, and things are going to get any easier for the future. We have a short majority, said Representative Kelly Armstrong, the Republican of North Dakota, an ally of McCarthy's on the speaker floor. Speaker's four-vote margin, we are about to very possibly lose two members in the very near future. are a reference to both the pending resignations of Chris Stewart from Utah to take care of his ailing wife and possibly the indictment in New York of George Santos. So the House is on hold with no votes that can't be held. I think they've actually left for the week because, once again, what has happened? In Minnesota, it was my way or the highway. They had no intention of working with anyone else. And when they lost, now they're me. That's a direct quote, I think, from the standard GOP here in Minnesota. Supreme Court rules that basically we're going to follow the legal precedents already established. You're not forcing things on there. And now, and like I said, and it is not just the fact that I think that they didn't get the cuts they wanted, that Biden so outplayed McCarthy on this to get the debt ceiling off the table, to get the government shutdown off the table. They can't use either one of those again. Which does bring up an interesting thing, because there clearly is some element here that realizes the far right of the Republican Party is not helping the rest of the Republican Party. Story today, after years of criticizing mail voting and so-called ballot harvesting is ripe for fraud, Republicans at the top of the party want to change course. They are poised to launch aggressive get-out-the-vote campaigns for 2024 that employ just those strategies, attempting to match the emphasis on early voting Democrats have used for years to lock in many of their supporters well ahead of Election Day. The goal is to persuade voters who support GOP candidates that early voting techniques are secure and to make sure they're able to return their ballots on time to be counted, thus putting less pressure on Election Day turnout efforts. Which is hilarious. It's hilarious for a few reasons. Because you see the beehive you guys got all going crazy because you kept throwing rocks at it about this stuff. Yeah, I want you to go to the beehive and tell the bees, hey guys, you need to calm down. It doesn't work like that. It also does present possibly the easiest ad campaign for Democrats nationwide, is that when Republicans come on in there and say, hey, early voting is great, and you just got to go to all these Republican districts and put up one billboard, one in every one of them. They want you to believe that early voting is safe. That's all it has to say. Dot, dot, dot. That's all it has to say. A black billboard with white writing. They want you to believe that early voting is safe. Dot, dot, dot. Maybe even put a little letter Q there, for God's sakes. They will freak out. I think they're compromised. I think the Republicans, we can't vote that way ever. It will totally demolish their ability to get any. It's just so easy. You guys have played yourself into this corner. And Democrats, don't do them any favors. Go and go for the jugular on this. Because I can tell you right now, if you start doing that, not only will they not get early voting, but a lot of their leaders are going to be considered traitors by the loon bins out in the far right. Delicious. Native Roots Radio, I am awake. That is up next. Have a good one. We are back on a Friday. Till then, see ya.